The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Bengals beat writers, fantasy football failure Fletcher Page and Paul Danner Jr. take you inside Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into a very special episode of the Deuce. That's right. It is the Bengals Beat Podcast 2, presented as always by our good friends at 50 West Brewing Company, with delicious, delicious beers you can drink and that you need to this time of year. If the team plays bad, you can just drink and feel better. That's what 50 West is here to do for you. But this is a special one. I said we're going to do something special. You don't know why, Fletcher? Why we're doing something special this week?
Lay it on me.
Because I can't talk about this game. I just can't. I can't do it. I don't want to do it. It's going to be too bad. I don't want to talk about it. So I thought this is a great time to pull the media round table out. We literally have a round table. We have scribes all around it, and I'm excited about it. First, from ESPN, Kat Terrell's here to make her BBP debut, which I'm very excited about. Welcome.
I'm excited. I finally got asked to be on the show.
Of course. It's normally because you're not around when we're actually doing, because you have decided whether maybe you showed up late or I don't know.
I would never show
never.
Up late.
No, never. Of course not.
Like me.
Of course not. Richard Skinner is back. We have a lot of bets.
Yes, we do, Paul.
Some of them were made on this podcast at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, my Carl Lawson sack leader pick was just maybe the dumbest thing I've ever done. It really may be. And I've done a lot of dumb things, as you know.
You have, including when we were having a bet for Rookie of the Year, picking Jabril Peppers.
I thought he had a shot. As God is my witness, I thought he had a shot.
I thought Jabril had a real shot. So good to have Skinny here from Local 12. And Jay Morrison of The Athletic is back. Good to have you back, Jay.
I'm just here to gloat that I did not have Carl Lawson in my top three sacks leaders for this year.
Yeah, you did not. You did not. Who did you have as the actual leader, though?
Well, I had Geno setting a career high, which is still in play. But I did have Jordan Willis up there, and I think he's sitting on one right now.
Is it in play?
What's he? That would five be a, and a half.
It,
in
it would
games?
Be the greatest 3 week stretch. I mean, in a long time.
He does go through spurts at times, and now they've got these other tackles playing pretty well. Who knows?
Ringo effect!
That's right.
Christian Ringo will change everything. So here's why I thought we should gather. There are a few fun topics and some not so fun to dive into that I think are interesting about what I dub covering the end of days.
Again.
Again.
Maybe.
Again. One more time. Potentially the end of days.
Maybe being the key word here.
We're pros at this point. I mean, we've been down the road of Marv speculation often.
You were not there in Minnesota last year. I thought that was end of days that day. I literally thought that day was end of days. Yeah. When I texted an assistant coach and said, who's coaching today? And he said, I don't know, not sure. I thought it was over. And here we are. Same spot, same time, same place.
I don't know, not sure.
So wait, there's only one person here that was at that game. I guess you're the only one.
No, Jim Osarski and I think, were the only two that were at that game.
Unfortunately, Paul was out. It's the lone trip in my time here that I was not able to make. And, Lord, did I miss quite a show.
I missed it, too.
I'm not sure I even saw two plays from that game because we were busy writing the end of Marv's days that didn't seem to come. It's like a vampire. He survives.
The behind the things people didn't see is that I somehow locked myself out of my laptop right after that report came out and almost threw it against the wall in frustration. I think I was running laps around my living room to de-stress myself.
Part of covering the end of days, what –
What is the worst part of covering the end of day? I know my worst part, but I will just throw that out to the floor, and then I'll get to the other question here.
Yeah, this is my first end of days, so I'm interested to see what you guys have said about previous end of days.
End of day virgin is what you are.
Well, it is an end of days virgin. Yeah.
Well, I've covered a lot of bad teams, as everyone knows, because they think I'm the curse.
Some of the worst teams.
Yeah. Well, no, none of the worst teams. I've always covered like 7 and 9 teams.
I thought it was great. I thought it was great when they were when the Bengals defense had the historically bad paces, and we all were comparing them to the Saints team that you covered.
Which you covered.
I was like,
yes.
Oh my God, you really have seen some bad defenses.
It's something. I've always said covering a mediocre team is worse than covering a really good team or a really bad team. That's what you want. The mediocre team is the worst because right now we're in this limbo where they're not eliminated. So if you ask them about the future, their automatic response is, well, we're still mathematically in the playoffs. So you just get nothing from anybody until they're actually eliminated. So it's just like weird limbo week. Well, you can't really ask any future questions because they won't answer them.
Yeah. And the fact is, whatever you write about the present, the fans don't care about. I mean, they don't care about this game. The only thing they care about is they hope they lose so he gets fired. I mean, that's the hope.
It's burn it down to save the city time.
Right. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Well, that's what they hope, but the next hire might not make them happy either.
That's the whole thing. It's the devil you know. You don't know what they're going to bring in here. And I agree with Kat where it is. If they were 2-11 or 2-12, whatever. I can't even do the math right now. But if it was a horrible team, it would be so much more interesting right
they
now.
They are horrible.
Yeah, but 5-8, there's that. They've got this mathematical hope, and there's just the storylines are just drying up, and it's just hard to find things interesting to write about.
Yeah, to me, that's the hardest part. Is that no matter what you write about, no matter what you say, it is instantly gets the same response. Fire Marv, doesn't matter, Mike sucks, right? That's every single story. I mean, you could literally be writing about Geno Atkins' giving to families, right? You could be writing about all this great deed he's doing in the community. He's paying off bills and he's doing all this great stuff. And I would be like, look at Geno, look all the good things he's doing. It doesn't matter if you don't fire Marv or Mike. Mike sucks. That's what you get.
By the way, you should ask Geno about that and see what he has to say.
I had that happen. I was writing just a fun little fluff piece about Tyler Boyd throwing Jeff Driscoll's ball in the stands and the efforts it took to get that back, track down the guy that caught it, the cop that got it back. And as I always do, I always end every interview with anything that I didn't touch on that you want to add. And the guy that caught the touchdown ball said, yeah, fire Marvin.
It's actually a hashtag now.
Yeah, that is incredible. Here's the other part that comes from this, I think is an interesting discussion for us to have. And that is what we see very often, and that is that you guys never ask the tough questions. And there's so much nuance to covering a team. I just think there are expectations that angry fans have that are unrealistic and unfounded, and I don't know that do anybody any good. And we as a, I think all of us independently have a desire to ask questions that can get answers. And a lot of times you either know the answer or there aren't answers, or you don't want to hear the answer that you already know is coming. What is your guys' initial response usually when you see that you guys never ask the tough questions question?
Yeah, I don't even know what that means. I mean, the tough question would be to ask Marvin Lewis maybe after that Cleveland Browns game, why are you still the coach? Why do you think you should still be the coach? What do you think the response is going to be?
Yeah.
You're not going to get a response from him. You're going to get a look and a sideways smile and just kind of I don't even think he'll respond to that. So, I mean, if that's what you want, I guess that can be asked, but you're not going to get any answer to that. He's not going to get up from the podium and walk away and go, you know what? I shouldn't be the coach. Let me go tender my resignation. It's not going to happen. So it's fruitless.
Yeah. We know the situation. And a version of those questions have been asked. And it's like, what are you going to do? You want every single time there's a press conference us to stand up and yell at him? You stink! Because I feel like fans don't want answers.
Why are you funding that wall, Marvin?
They want someone to yell. They want to yell at him and not to get any kind of answers. And it makes it for a tough scenario. And frustrated fans, understandably.
But fans already had that with Twitter. They've already got that platform.
Marvin doesn't have Twitter, though, so they can only yell at the Bengals official account and us.
Poor. That's who the other person we need to have here on this roundtable is. Poor Bengal, running Bengals social media account person. Boy, what a rough gig that is right now.
They're really nice. Please don't yell at them anymore.
Yeah, come on. They're good people. They're just trying to do their job. Jago.
I think what fans miss out on is the fact that, you know, they don't do this job. It's easy to say fire those questions out like that, but number one, there has to be a level of respect there, and the fans don't have it. They don't respect Marvin as a coach. They may not respect him as a person. They don't understand that we have to have that back and forth. And if you throw those kind of questions out, you're going to ruin everything that you also need to do. Like, you may need to work. You may need to grab Marvin coming off the field after a practice for a story you're on. And what help's he going to be if you're treating him like that in a press conference? And really, do you see that anywhere? Do you see – I mean, maybe in New York, and a lot of times that's the news guys that fly by for a one-time yes. hit and they kind of grandstand. It's something that – it's like you said, it's a nuanced thing with beat writers. There's a really fine line you have to walk there.
There's a difference between asking the question that needs to be asked and what you said. Grandstanding, which is a thing, people trying to make a name for themselves, people trying to look tough. To me, the difference is grandstanding is when you know there's no answer that you're going to get out of your question. You're just doing it to say that you did it and you look like some sort of badass.
Well, we remember the one last year where the reporter showed up and asked for the question of Sally from Gold Star, who has a question.
Betty Lou.
From Gold Skyline. Star. I mean, honestly, really? I mean, yeah. How did you think he was going to respond to that stuff?
Right.
That was almost childish is what that was.
It was entertaining.
Yeah, I wasn't there, but I thought it was I was actually going to touch on that before you brought that up.
Yeah.
And so I've seen reporters approach things in all different ways. And I've seen reporters come into the building their first day. They think they're big and bad, and they're going to show everyone how tough they are. And they're asking the tough questions in the most obnoxious way possible to grandstand and make a point. And it just never, ever it does not work. The coach will hate you. The players will hate you. And if you don't need them for anything, I guess that's fine. But I've just seen it not work probably at least 3 times. And so the thing about access is, yes, we do need to keep access. Fans will say you're scared of losing your access. Well, it's a bit overrated because the amount of one-on-one time you get with the coach is almost nothing. However, you do need to be respectful in the way you ask questions and maintain a relationship with these people, because you have no idea where that coach will end up or that player. I mean, a player you covered 6 years ago could end up on the team you cover now. So it's all about respect and how you approach things. Now, coaches might not like your question, but if you approach it in the right way, they'll eventually understand why you asked that question. So if you've built up this relationship and eventually you say, do you think you should still be the coach here? You'll probably get a better answer and he'll understand, rather than you standing up and screaming it at him every week, like, why are you still here?
And there's a timing of this stuff. I mean, there's a timing, you know, obviously after the Browns game, that we all knew what was coming that Monday. We knew that line of questioning was going to happen, and it did. But you can't, doing it repeatedly is not helpful to anyone. It's not helpful to getting the answer you want. It's not helpful towards this happening in any kind of respectful manner. And it's not that these questions aren't going to come up again, because they're obviously going to come up again. I mean, but the timing of it is important, and you have to think in the big picture of – when is a good time to do this again, rather than just every single time the man sits in a chair to yell at him, how do you have this job? You need to go. I mean, and I think that is what fans want. And there's also the other thing that y'all can speak of. I yawled for you there, Kat.
Wearing off on you.
Yeah, I know. The other thing that y'all can speak of is the idea of, okay, if you guys were harder on him, it would affect change, right? To me, that's always the most ridiculous thing that I do hear from fans. I understand fans come wanting to feel like there's more anger, animosity, because they feel that and they want to see it in the press conference. The idea that something that we ask, even how we treat press conferences, would have any effect on Mike Brown and him making this decision and the family's thoughts on things is crazy.
No, I mean, I wrote after the 15 debacle in the playoffs that he should resign based on the way that game ended, that the time had come. I don't think he resigned. I don't think I affected change. I felt better for writing it. It got a lot of clicks because a lot of people agreed with it, but it didn't affect change. I mean, I did talk radio in this town for a long time, and I ripped the Brown family to shreds. It has never affected change. It's never affected how they've gone about business. Paul Daugherty's done a lot of the same stuff. I mean, you do it because that's part of your job. As I've got a little more leeway than you guys do as a columnist, and Paul obviously is a columnist, so he's opining more times than not. But it's not going to affect change. It may make fans feel better that somebody believes that and somebody writes that and somebody says that. But with this family, you're not going to affect their mind. You're not going to affect their change. I even had one member of the family write to me and say, I really enjoy what you write. I don't agree with it half the time, but I enjoy it. And I thought, okay, they read it. But that doesn't mean they're going to change because of what I wrote, for goodness sakes, and what anybody writes.
Yeah, the other thing here is so many of these questions shouldn't be directed at Marvin. They should go to the people above him making the decisions, and they don't talk. Yeah. We don't have the chance to ask those questions to those people. So that's why they get lost out there, because other teams, you go to the GM, you ask, is he safe? You look for that vote of confidence, and you just can't do that here. There's nobody above Marvin that talks on a regular basis, if at all.
Yeah, and in particular, in this case, they have gone quiet for sure. Which, especially after everything if they went quiet last year with all the noise that was out there, that's always going to be their stance in regards to this thing, and has been for a long time. Anyway, that's good stuff. I thought it was an interesting discussion. Anything else y'all want to add on that outside of Fire Marvin, right? Isn't that what they...
Actually, I do have something to add. The most annoying thing I see on Twitter or whatever is that we're scared to ask the tough questions.
Right.
Like, they think Marvin is going to jump out of his seat and attack us. I don't know. I mean, I was 23 and used to have Sean Payton yell at me for asking injury questions. I'm pretty sure that would be way scarier than Marvin smirking at you and not answering your question.
Yeah.
Usually he'll stare at you if he doesn't like your question. But that's about it.
I mean... I've made a pretty good habit of getting backhanded almost on a weekly basis on this beat. It's fine. I think none of us have. It's not fright. It's part of it. It's honestly a matter of understanding when, where, why, and how this should happen, and what's the best way to try to actually get an answer that you need and that you want out of these situations.
I mean, you recall I got called to his office once.
You did? Yes.
And behind closed doors, we had a little chat, a little powwow, and I nodded along and went out and thought, I'm not going to do what you just asked me to do. I mean, okay, fine. You told me, and I'm good with it. I'll live with it.
Yeah, it's not our role to be scared, and it's not our role to comply.
I've gotten text about how he doesn't like a question I ask, and it's not like I go home and cry about it.
No,
it's like, all right, you didn't like my question. Tomorrow I'll ask more questions, and life goes on, and he forgets about it. And that's basically how the NFL works. Some coaches hold grudges, but most don't.
You know what's rare is to feel like you're getting a hug on Twitter. Like, you don't really get that very often. I feel like some fans are trying to hug us now, where they're like, I feel bad for the way Marvin treats them, like the way he answers their questions, the way he talks down to them, and blah blah blah. And I crack up at that. It's now turned to that point where people now just feel sad for us.
I will take the smirks and the snarky jabs at you any day of the week over the coaches that will scream at you or just no. I'll take that. That's nothing.
Maybe we should take advantage of this empathy and start a GoFundMe for us.
Yeah. We'll also accept beer.
For the poor journalist. Or you could just subscribe to all of our websites. Save local journalism,
please. That would
work,
too.
So let's move on from a very depressing topic to one that is a little more fun that we yelled a lot about in recent days, actually. And I just thought, well, this should probably happen in a recorded form. So this is sort of a version of a story that Kat, I hope your story's up already, is it?
Yes, it's
okay,
up.
Okay, good. I didn't want to feel like we were lopped. You can read Kat's story on a version of this, which is what sparked a grander debate between all of us on ESPN.com. And here's how the criteria I'm gonna give on this. Six players on the current club, IR or whatever. Six players, list the ones that you must have with you if you took the head coaching job. Marv's fired. You, Skinny, you, Jay, you, Fletcher, you, Kat, are the head coach. Who are you taking with you? Pretend there's essentially an expansion draft in this time of FC Cincinnati's expansion draft, and you have to protect. Who are your six that you're taking with you to the other side? Let's
who wants
let's
to go first on this?
Let's
one,
go. Let's just go around. Let's go around the horn. Let's go this way. Let's go to Jay if you have it.
Okay, I think a lot of us are going to have the same top five. The question's that sixth one. The six I picked, three are based on what they've already done, what they've already accomplished. Two is more on potential, and then one a little bit of both. I'm even with AJ's injury history of late, I think you got to take AJ Green with you. You got to take the two defensive linemen they just re-upped this year, Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap. And I think everybody would take Joe Mixon, even though we know what running backs are in this league, they don't last. I think he's still.
But
has
he's going only going into his third year, so
right?
He's still got shelf
and
life,
he's
yes.
still got a huge upside now that they've figured out how to use him. And I think Will Jackson still has a lot ahead of him. I was kind of torn that sixth spot with what the league is. I was thinking John Ross, even though he hasn't proven much yet. But I'm going to go Jesse Bates. I just think that kid has a lot of upside. It's been really impressive what he's done in his rookie year in the middle of a dysfunctional defense. And I think he would be another good cornerstone to have in that secondary alongside Will.
So you're not taking Tyler Boyd?
No.
Really? Okay. Interesting. Wow.
So maybe it won't be the same.
Maybe
I can't
not.
Wait to hear this one.
Well, I'm going with your two defensive linemen. I'm going to go Geno and Carlos, and I'm going to go Will Jackson, and I am going to go Jesse Bates, and I am going to go Tyler Boyd as my fifth. And that's where I stopped yesterday if I had to go five. So I did not have A.J. Green in my five. But if you're going to make me take a sixth, I will take A.J. Green as a sixth.
Can we discuss this point of view? That
yes.
You have basically taken the point of view that – because when we were talking about five, you said A.J.'s not in your five.
And he wouldn't have
He's
been.
He's not part of your core,
he wouldn't have been.
Your core five. You think there's a better chance that he's washed up.
I don't think he's washed up. But, look, we're 2 years removed from the hamstring injury. He did play a full 17 and was very good in 17. But now the toe, and the toe's come a couple times. It came, what, in 14?
14.
Yeah, 14 in the Falcon game. He got hurt early and missed a handful of games there. It's come back. Now he's had surgery on it. So we've had a hamstring issue. Now we got a toe-foot issue. Last I checked, wide receivers need their legs and feet, right? And he's going to be 31. And while that's not ancient.
Last I checked, things do heal.
Things do heal, but you start getting up there, and it feels like the injuries come quicker and faster and last longer and – again, if you're making me take a sixth, he's my sixth. So it's not like I think he's out of the realm of that, but he would not be in my five whatsoever. No.
I think you're ageist is what you are.
Yeah. I'm the oldest guy in the group, so I'm ageist. Yes. I hate old people.
You heard it here first.
I'm just going to clip that out singularly and just make that be your ringtone every time you call me.
If old people were on Twitter, they would come for you.
Yes.
With that said, I'm taking A.J. Green number one. That's my top choice. I'll take Green, Joe Mixon, Tyler Boyd, William Jackson. I'm taking Carlos Dunlap instead of Geno because I just don't want a defensive tackle that's already 30, going on 31. And I actually came down to – I know.
Ageist. I hate old people.
The closer to the line to where the ball is snapped, I don't want a 30-year-old down there.
Carlos.
But I'm keeping
He's pretty close to where the ball it snapped.
Is, not all the way. I came down to Jesse Bates and Carl Lawson for my sixth. So I like the upside of Jesse. I still think he's got a lot of weight to gain and strength to put on, and I think he's only 21 years old. So I'm keeping Jesse Bates for the potential.
One thing on that, too. I mean, the other part, you know, he was drafted for his ability to play the ball, and he's done that at times. I think he's going to get better doing that, too. I think he's got a chance to be a Pro Bowl guy moving forward. I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
He's already getting votes. He's in the top 10 already as a rookie on this bad defense. I mean, people have taken notice.
All right, Kat, you're up.
I did start this debate yesterday.
You started all of this, so this is kind of your fault that we're even doing
this. This is what happens when you're covering the end of days.
Skinny hates old people and everything else.
And A.J. Green, apparently.
Yeah, I know. I just didn't know that was a thing.
Wait a minute. Whoa. For the record, I really like A.J. Green, and I think he's had a brilliant career to this point. Injuries. Enough. I don't want an injured guy unless he's my sixth. He's my sixth.
I'm just trying.
And then
to
I'm going to trade him, and I'm going to trade him for draft picks. That's what I'm going
to
do.
I'm just trying to stir things up. I'm going to send everyone on Twitter after you because of your hatred for AJ
trades
Green.
AJ Green for like a third. Hey, Cooper got a one.
AJ is a great guy to cover, by the way.
None
of us hate him unless
we are
like
very lucky
resentment.
To have him as our superstar.
Yeah, he was the other day. He was great when he was talking. Well, before he went on IR, he He's talking about his injury for the first time in weeks, and I go up to him and I have to ask him on video to make a pick for the SEC championship game, and he's just like, sure, no problem. Right. Most of the time when a guy is talking for the first time in weeks, he's not going to want to stick around, but AJ's great. So,
pump up his Bulldogs.
Anyway, so AJ would be my first pick. I think that with the right offense, he had a great year before he got hurt. I mean, yeah, the injuries could be a factor, but I would take my chances on that. I mean, that guy could be a Hall of Famer. I think if things keep going the way they are, he won't be, but he certainly could be, and I think everyone knows that. I would take AJ. I would take Mixon. I would take Boyd. That's three, right?
That is three.
I think I'll go Mobo with my next pick.
Yes, one step closer to Mobo. Moritz.
Yeah, just kidding.
We do occasionally, like once a month, I feel like I get a, hey, any chance we could see Mobo? Boringer.
The thing is, we can see him. We see him all the time in practice. We see him.
Day.
You're not going to see him on the field on Sunday.
NFL football is not for everyone.
No.
Yeah. Then on the other side, I would go William Jackson, Jesse Bates, and Geno Atkins. Actually, I thought if there were more players that we could pick, I would take Dalton, just because if you're thinking in the context of starting a new franchise, you could have a guy like Dalton for a year and then draft your superstar quarterback, but he could tide you over for a year if that's how you're looking at it. So that leaves out Dunlap, but I just think when Atkins is playing his best, he's one of the best defensive tackles in the game, 30 or not.
Yeah, so I'm glad you – that's a good segue, because I thought I might be the first person to take Andy Dalton, and I will be the only one at the table apparently taking Andy Dalton. And he's in – quarterback is just too important to, like, just throw it aside when you have a guy could, at the very least, could be a two-year bridge on a manageable contract. And maybe, you know, maybe could even be a guy who could actually win you some games early rather than relying on Dwayne Haskins or whoever to go out there and get beat
that's
up
fair,
for a year.
But I would ask you this, and I don't disagree with that, but – could Jeff Driskel be a bridge quarterback?
No.
That's what you're going to
no.
do. He can't be a bridge quarterback.
Why would you want him as your bridge if you could keep Dalton on a manageable number?
Well, we're only allowed to keep six, so we got to find 47.
It's a manageable number.
Driskel's number is a little more manageable
you don't
than
be
Dalton.
It is a
there.
Lot more manageable than Dalton. But okay. All right. That's your pick.
In Driskel's defense, I think it's hard to know how good he is because the whole team is kind of in disarray.
So here's a exercise that I've talked about, and I kind of did this in preparation for this. If you were taking a quarterback in the first round, but you didn't have the first or second pick, which is where we expect this team to be, you wanted to take one. And if you looked back to the last 10 years, how many do you think you would take their best over Andy Dalton right now? Best of one. Down some names for you of who they
yeah,
are.
Yeah, yeah, please do.
There's
that.
21 of them.
Okay.
That's in the last
talking about
10
like
years.
The third pick? The third quarterback?
Third, 32.
So okay.
Picked third overall between 32 overall. First round guy.
There's,
but
there's
you're not
one guy
be number
pops,
one.
One guy pops in my head, but go ahead.
Man,
yeah.
Right. I mean, there
this.
Are some.
Yeah.
There obviously are some. Jackson, we know those. Mahomes, Watson, Paxton Lynch, Blake Bortles, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, Blaine Gabbert, Christian Ponder, Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez, Josh Freeman, Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco.
Matt Ryan.
Obviously, who was
Mahomes.
Third overall?
Mahomes.
After
there may be crazy Dolphin fan that would argue Tannehill. I would not make that argument.
No.
But crazy Dolphin fan might make that argument.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I think you're right. I think that's right.
Yeah.
It's
three. So, right. So if you're going to say, all right, well, we'll just get a guy in the draft, right? Because you're not going to get a free agent that's going to be worth a crap or better than Andy at this point. And you're certainly going to get him at the number you have him at. You're taking a 1 in 7 chance that they will be better than Andy, better ever. Than Andy is right now. Is that a chance that you want to take? You want to risk your coaching life on?
Well, I was working from a flawed premise where I thought you're taking six from this team, and then you'd be able to pluck some guys here and there from other teams. I didn't know I was going to have to rely on 47 rookies after the.
No,
after
right, exactly. That's my point.
I mean, but you're going to find a quarterback. No one's going to. You're not going to go get a quarterback better than him. Is my point. That's going to be. It would even be available in any circumstance.
I think a lot of this depends on this. How much are you rebooting this, rebuilding this after this year? That to me is the biggest.
I don't
question
think this is a roster that. I mean, not granted we're only having six, but I mean, I don't think this is a roster that is. Needs a huge reboot.
Because I'm with you.
I think the roster is solid. I think the roster is young and growing and evolving. They have more holes than they probably thought they were going to have.
Yeah, if you look around this league, I mean, the teams that are chasing quarterbacks are the ones that regularly have lack of success.
Yeah.
The Bengals have had success under Andy Dalton. It hasn't come here of late, and some of those factors are not Andy Dalton's fault by any stretch of the imagination. But, I mean, you can't forget all the things that he's done. I think fans do that easily because of the non-winning of playoff games, but the dude has accomplished a lot as a starting quarterback.
And
he would start for a whole lot of teams in this league.
And since he started, I mean, his game clearly has gone up a level since the 14 season when everybody was questioning him at what he was. He had great. He played great in 15. He's had a lot of struggling of having his parts together since then, and put together stretches of really good football, and clearly been better even with a lot of problems the last 3 years than far than he was the first 3 years. Every single time he played in a playoff game, and to count the 14 playoff game against him is almost unfair when he's trying to throw to freaking Kobe Hamilton out there. So have we seen him at the level he is play in a playoff game? And have we seen him play in a playoff game not coached by Marvin Lewis? I think everyone wants to talk about Andy and Marvin connected. I'm curious what Andy looks like not connected to Marvin Lewis a little bit too. I think you get hamstrung in playoffs by a guy that consistently has lost big games with other quarterbacks, by the way.
Or primetime games, as are usually lumped
or
together.
Or primetime, all of it. I mean, all of it is. You know, I think that's interesting, and I would like to see a couple of years with me as the head coach and Andy Dalton as the quarterback, at the very least for the last 2 years of his very manageable contract. Well, I consider whatever guy, if I'm Mahomesing this and trying to put him on my bench and sit behind him for a year like Alex Smith, what that looks like. That's why I would definitely keep Andy Dalton. AJ, William Jackson, Tyler Boyd. Give me Geno over Carlos. I think his game will correlate longer. I think Carlos is going to fall off into his 30s. And give me Joe Mixon. That's where I'm at. I mainly wanted to do my Andy Dalton rant, though.
I think people forget Carlos has a lot of wear and tear on his body. He's been playing in this league for a long time. Like, I forget he's 29 because he's been playing since he was, what, 20?
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
It is. And, either way, I mean, either of those two guys, they took a huge risk putting $110 million into two guys who are going to be playing into their 30s. And now here we are having those conversations where neither of them have been as effective as they've needed to be as the season has gone on.
And that's where if you go back and you wonder, with a new coach coming in, how much do you rebuild when you do have money invested in those two guys, a significant amount of money? Are you really going to rebuild with those two contracts still hanging over your head for a while? Or are you going to try to piecemeal and add to the roster and just hope that the decisions you make and the players you get are going to make this roster better enough to get above 500 and make another push for the playoffs?
They do have a combined 15 sacks, and the last 7 weeks they have not had teams in obvious passing situations. I mean, who knows where they would be at right now if this defense was where it needed to be, if games were close or if the Bengals were winning. I'm not ready to write those guys off yet.
Yeah, no one was saying this in September that
they were playing great in September.
Yeah, everyone was playing great.
But isn't that what happened to older players? Isn't that when the end of the season, it starts to wear on them more so than it did when they were younger? I mean, isn't that part of this?
Considering the team fired its defensive coordinator, I'm going to give some of them a pass.
I'm not writing either of them off.
You make a good point.
I think some of what Jay said is right. I mean, let's face it, you're getting Howes 45-10 and 51-10 or whatever the heck that score was, and the Browns are up, three plus scores on you. Don't have really a great chance to rush the passer at that point. So I think some of that's factored in too.
Yep. All right, let's wrap it up with putting everybody on the timer and on the spot going around. We'll go around the other way this time. Marv stays or goes and why? And I'm giving everybody 1 minute, and you cannot go over 1 minute. I'm going to set an actual timer on everybody. So, Kat, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Go.
Let's go. I'm almost inclined to believe he stays just because it'd be a total Bengals thing to do, but I think this is the end. And the reason is the thing the fans have been saying in social media for months, they aren't going to the games anymore to make a point. I think their point has been made. This is a team that actually cares about ticket sales. I know they can seem tone deaf sometimes, but there's no way they've missed that. And I think everybody knows it's just time for a change.
Well done, 30 seconds. Wow, under.
I'm going to see if I can do that in 15 seconds.
Okay.
Speed talk.
What do you say, Fletcher?
I think he should go. I think seeing Brown.
Should, not should.
I think
will Marv stay or go? You
think
he goes?
Go.
Okay.
I think seeing Browns and Broncos fans, in the legions, and I think Sunday, I think this Raiders game could be really ugly.
No doubt.
Sub 40. So I think he will. That's really it.
I think in true Marvin fashion, they win the last three games in a row, make the playoffs, lose a game, and somehow he stays.
0-8.
0-8. No, I think he'll go. I think what Catherine said is dead on. They're not blind to what fans have done, which is they keep showing up less and less and less. They're going to show up in less and less mode on Sunday against the Raiders. I don't think anything Marvin can do beyond making the playoffs, and that would have to be the most miracle of miracles saves that job. It is time. I mean, there haven't been a lot of clean breakoff points for him. I thought last year was a clean breakoff point.
Last year was.
This year, you gave him one more swing at it. Mm-hmm. And I don't care about the injuries. You got one more swing, my man, and the swing didn't work out. And you've got to at least at this point respect the fan base enough to say it's time for him to go.
Yep.
I'm not so sure. If they go 0-3 these last three games, then yes, I'm going to say that's probably the end. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they're going to go 3-0, like you said. But we saw some progress against San Diego. I think if that continues, we
progress.
We talked about this on the way to LAX, yeah. On the way home. That yeah. I mean, Mike Brown is 83 and as morbid as it sounds, you know, it's he's not a guy that's going to want to blow this thing up and start over. I mean, how many more chances is he going to have?
Wait a minute. He did it at age 80. He did it at age 82. What the hell you think he's not going to do it at age 83? I mean, he sees it.
No, that's what I'm saying. He keeps Marvin because it's
Man.
It's the devil, you know. And
he is the devil.
It's not like this roster is horrible.
Well, in this scenario, I don't mean he's actually a devil.
Yeah, and it's the second youngest roster in the league coming into the season. I just think that they see the ticket sales going down, but their fortune's not going to shrivel up and die. The NFL is what it is. They're going to make money as long as they own this team. May not be as much money as they'd like, but it has a factor, but I don't think that's going to be the end factor. I think if there is progress these last three games, they bring him back.
I mean, like, you can't watch last year and deny the fact that that's possible. I mean, just because we all sat at this point last year was they went to play the third-to-last game against the Minnesota Vikings and said it is over and then saw what happened and not say, oh, it's impossible. Certainly, it's possible. I think he goes. I think this is finally it. I agree with you guys. I just think everything that has happened, it's right. Mike knows one thing, and he knows what he sees right in front of him, and he sees a team that has bad offense at times, terrible defense and nobody watching them in a city that really hates them more than they ever have. And there's only one. He's officially in the corner. You're officially backed in the corner with no move to play except for the one move that he's resisted playing all these years.
Yeah, but I mean, I can go back to the 2002 Saints game here in Dick LeBeau's last year.
Yep.
It was so empty. Jim Haslett was actually the head coach of the Saints then. It was so empty.
Sure, that was a great Saints
team. You could feel that was the point in time where he not only thought, hey, I need to get a new coach, but we need to go outside our comfort zone, do something out of what we normally do. And that's when they brought Marvin Lewis in. And at the time, it was the right decision to make. But goodness gracious, my God almighty, we all sit here, five of us sitting around this table. We have as many playoff wins in 16 years as he does.
It is correct.
I mean, at some point, you got to say enough's enough.
I just want to point something out. If Marvin goes, we all know what's coming next, right?
That's where I was going to go next. One word, Hugh, yes or no? Is it Hugh, yes or no?
Yes.
No.
Ooh, yes.
Ooh, yes.
No.
I'm going to say yes. It just feels, for what you said, it's not blowing it up if Hugh stays, right? Because he's a man inside a little bit. And I think that's the compromise. Mike's view would
that's
be.
The compromise right there. That's the compromise. That's the absolute compromise.
Mike is not blowing it up. It's just Hugh, who he wanted originally in the whole coaching waiting plan back before he took the Browns job, and they're willing to take the hit. The problem is they'll still lose the game that they were trying to win because fans will take this just as bad as if it was Marv, because you can't sell 336-1 and Hugh essentially becoming a national laughing stock.
I just want to say if that all comes to pass, I guarantee you there will be nobody on social media asking us when we're going to ask the tough questions.
Yeah.
There will be a lot of them.
That press conference will be live. Liddy, that's what the kids say, right? It'll be lit.
I don't think they say that. But it'll probably be like that press conference where Marvin pleaded with us to stop asking him if he was leaving.
That is my favorite. We should just, anytime anybody talks to us about not asking the tough questions, we should just play back that press conference where he literally begged us to stop. Please, can we please stop asking these questions?
And then, of course, I followed it up with, okay, but I have one more question about this.
Just one more. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining. This has been fun, entertaining, I think, informative. Skinny hates old people.
I hate old people. What can I tell you?
Make sure you read Cat at ESPN and Skinny at Local 12 and Jay at The Athletic. Subscribe. Save our lives. Go fund us. You can do it with subscriptions. You don't have to do it just by actually starting a GoFundMe page. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening to The Deuce, and we will talk to you, unfortunately, after Sunday's bad tilt.